This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Linda Schwartz is a Connecticut resident with a big job. For 2 years now, she's been the Assistant Secretary for Policy and Planning with the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. Today, we sit down with the former State Veterans Commissioner to find out what she's been doing on the federal level. The VA system, whether providing timely disability compensation or quality health care to veterans, has had its share of controversy. We want to hear from you today, whether you're a veteran or whether someone in your family is a former service member. What kind of health care have you received at the West Haven or Newington VA hospitals? And in terms of benefits, has the VA granted your service-connected disability claims in a timely manner for you or your family member? You can join the conversation today, 860-275-7266, email where we live at WMPR.org, or you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. I want to welcome back to the studio Dr. Linda Schwartz. Again, she's Assistant Secretary for Policy and Planning at the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
So it's been 2 years that you've been in Washington. What's it been like?
It's been very exciting, very busy, having an opportunity to make some difference. Little victories, not big victories, but moving the agenda. And I think, you know, my experience as the commissioner for almost 12 years and also as a disabled veteran myself, it has been important for me to be at many of the tables, I think, because I did promise the veterans of Connecticut that I would do my best. And sometimes it is very elementary to bring in to any discussion. What is it really like to be a veteran? What is it really like to have some of these issues? The human side of it often gets forgotten in some of the deliberations.
I mean, you have a very high-level position within the federal VA. This is a big bureaucracy. You're a veteran. You were used to speaking with veterans each and every day here in Connecticut. You know, how are you making that same commitment when you're working in Washington?
Well, in reality, I still get calls from veterans in Connecticut to help them with things. I'm not sure how they got my telephone number, but we've been able to do that. In policy and planning, some of my responsibilities is I co-chair a committee with the Department of Defense. It would probably be my dream job. It is called the Interagency Council on Complex Care, and the real mission of this group, it's all of the Surgeon Generals and all of the military services, to work to craft a warm handoff, a meaningful handoff, when people have to leave the military because of injuries, illnesses, or disabilities. And I think people don't realize that even when we're not at war, between 25 and 30,000 military members have to leave the military every year because of illness, injuries, or disabilities. So that's when we're not at war. So from that perspective, wanting to raise the visibility of what I had as a commissioner, knowing that this road has to go all the way home, it just can't be DOD giving it to VA, that we needed to engage our state directors to bring them into the network, because state directors do have a lot of connections to make things happen. So that's one of the things that I've done. But I also believe that, perhaps you don't know, but I was in an aircraft accident. And at that time, the rules are very different. I had to leave the military because of my injuries, but I was not eligible to go to the VA. They made me put in a claim so that I could receive care from the VA. And 3.5 years later, I was granted eligibility to go to the VA for care.
This was back in 1986.
Yes.
And we still hear stories today from veterans who, because of their service or they're in the military, they get injured. It takes a long time to get those benefits, still in 2016.
I realize that, and I think some of the issues of unraveling that. It is a vast bureaucracy. That's one of the things I really learned. And although I have to say, under Secretary McDonald and Sloan Gibson, they have made this like one of their priorities. And benefits is part of the package, as well as the health care and the National Cemetery Association. But leadership has changed. When I came to Washington, that was actually about 2 years ago, mm-hmm. actually, really in time. And at that time, the people that are in leadership positions now, only two of them were there before I came. The rest of us are all new. All new appointments. And I think benefits has been a real important thing because we've looked at the complexity of care, the computerized systems. These are all issues that have lingered for so many years, and the increase in the number of veterans looking for help has been particularly, we have reduced the backlog by using many things. For example, most of the claims were being submitted in paper, sometimes paper and pencil. So they're digitalizing them now, so they have a better chance of not losing the record. So it'll be in the computer and that they'll be able to do some work with it. Part of what my area is looking at the records, some of the people leaving the military do not have their full military records. So the computers of DOD and VA do not speak to each other.
They still don't speak to each other. Because this is something you brought up when you were commissioner here.
I know. It's like, as my husband Stan said, well, you're there now. You brought this up to them. Give it a shot and see if you can change it. One of the things we do have, and I really want to say that it's not hopeless, there's something called the Joint Legacy Viewer. And what this is it's like the computer systems are not directly tied to each other. But VA, over, I think, about 300,000 people have access to this. So when we're looking for information on a claim, we can actually pull up in this viewer and just look at the military record. And so in some of the things that one of the demonstrations, it was very impressive, because they could actually pull up the an X-ray that was taken 5 years ago to see that, indeed, the claim of injury to the leg was substantiated. And so it kind of expedited the whole thing to be able to actually see that record. It's far from the best we can do, but it is working, and it's like having a stick shift on your car.
I'm speaking with Dr. Linda Schwartz. Right now, she is the VA Assistant Secretary for Policy Planning in Washington, D.C. For 12 years, under three different governors,
yes.
She was the State Veterans Commissioner here in Connecticut. If you have a question or comment for Dr. Linda Schwartz, the number 860-275-7266. You can also email Where We Live at WMPR.org. And as always, find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. So we were talking about process and, you know, how the computers within the computer systems, the databases between the Department of Defense and the federal VA, how they're still not connected. But what about making a human connection? So we hear often from veterans, and you know this in all the career that you've had, just sometimes having a veteran be able to call a phone number and talk to a real person and feel like their issue or problem is getting addressed in a timely manner. You know, we hear so often that that's still not the case because it is such a big system.
Definitely. We have over 22 million veterans in America. About 9 million are enrolled in VA healthcare. We have about 4.6 million service-connected disabled veterans. And, of course, we are still a country at war. So that is not going to get smaller. It's going to get larger. And this secretary, Secretary McDonald, had started something called MyVA. It is a program to kind of temper and improve the culture of how VA actually, the people within VA actually look at veterans. And I know one of the things that Connecticut should be very proud of, as I am, is that they started a community advisory board. as part of this MyVA and Connecticut, I think because we had a lot of things already in place, became the very first state to have a community advisory board. And and this is comprised of both military veterans, some of our individuals who do provide support services. Commissioner Sean Connolly is on this. So it's to bring to VA the local issues that need to be addressed so they don't have to go all the way to Washington and come back again. And while this is not in every state, the capacity for folks in Connecticut and Massachusetts to have someone talk to them about their issues. We've set up a new website. I know a lot of our Connecticut veterans are not, maybe they're better off now than they were with using the computer systems, but MyVA, just go to that website. And you can find a lot of different resources, especially numbers to call. And I know I want to talk to you a little bit more about some of the resources that we don't really talk about a lot that are available, especially for people who are in crisis.
Before we go to break, I did want to ask you, you know, there's been talk, and now that you're in Washington, you have to follow probably a little bit more about what members of Congress and the private sector are talking about. But in terms of this huge bureaucracy and finding ways to better serve veterans, because you have the benefit side, the healthcare side, and the burial side, there's been talk over the last couple of years about whether the system should be privatized. Why is that not a solution in your opinion?
Well, I know that we had the Congress had a commission on care. They were tasked with doing an entire assessment of the VA, and they were given 9 months, which is difficult. Then they made recommendations to the Secretary and to the Congress. We, the VA, it's awful. I just said we, the VA. The VA looked at these, and one of those was, to actually privatize healthcare. Mm-hmm. So we have not just your hospital care. We have vet centers. That's part of our healthcare provider. Who's going to do that? The unique issues of veterans needs to be preserved. And also, you have to be realistic. Now, I live in Pawcatuck, okay? That is not near West Haven, where I receive my care. And in today's society, nobody's going to drive 65 miles to get health care, no matter what kind of care that is. So some of the Choice Act, and let me just be clear, the Choice Act was not VA's design, it was the Congress's design. But we have come to realize that indeed, for our veterans who can't travel, and I'm not just talking about Connecticut, I'm thinking of West Virginia and some parts of Idaho and Montana, they can't get to the VA hospital. The idea of using providers in the community to provide that care, that is an important change.
But it wasn't working very well.
Well, it's not working very well from the perspective of
the middleman?
Yes. This is not your usual healthcare system. And let me just be honest, this happened before I came. So before I came to VA. So I was critical of the fact that we have, but you don't understand that this was the way that Congress wanted it, to have a middleman, HealthNet or TriWest, as the brokers. Not necessarily an insurance plan like you have the insurance, you go find the provider, and then they pay the bill. That's not the way it works. These entities, we call them the third-party administrators, they have to find the doctor. So in some states and in some places, doctors were refusing to accept the Medicare, which is what the going rate is for reimbursement. They refused to accept it. Then that there was also the fact that the bills were not being paid in a timely fashion. So many veterans who had actually been on fee-for-service, I can think of one. She was a nurse in Vietnam. She had been seeing a neurologist for years. VA had been paying for the care because she lives in a very remote, and she had aneurysms in her cranial aneurysms. That's a real scary thing. But when they told her doctor he would have to take the Medicare, he said, "I don't want to see her anymore." After years. So let me just be honest. It is not a perfect system. But the fact that many physicians would not accept the Medicare is an important aspect.
And we're going to continue talking about the Veterans Choice Program as well as other initiatives under the federal VA. I'm here with Dr. Linda Schwartz. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll take your phone calls and questions after that break. This is Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. The U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs became a cabinet-level department under President H.W. Bush, but programs for veterans like disability compensation can be traced all the way back to the start of World War I. How has the system evolved since? That's a question our guest can help answer. Dr. Linda Schwartz is Connecticut's former Veterans Commissioner. She's now Assistant Secretary for Planning and Policy at the Federal VA. She's in studio this hour to take your questions, 860-275-7266. You can email Where We Live at WMPR.org. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. I want to take a quick call. Ron is calling from West Hartford. Ron, you're on the show.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Go ahead, Ron.
I just wanted to say, yeah, I'm a 40% disabled Vietnam vet. I was 10% shrapnel disabled. And I didn't know that I was suffering from PTSD until 2004. And so, you know, I want to thank the VA for helping me get that claim. And I wanted to say that it took a service officer from the American Legion to help me address that through the VA bureaucracy. But what I did want to mention, and I think the commissioner just mentioned this earlier, was about VA Health Net. I was getting treated for psoriasis outside of the VA, and it was getting paid for by fee basis. And then when they went into this Health Net, what I was getting for free, I was now going to have to pay between $100 and $150 a week. And as somebody, you know, who's retired, I'm 67 years old, I just couldn't afford that. So I just wanted to make that comment and address, and I know the commissioner just addressed that a few minutes ago.
All right. Thank you, Ron, for your comment. Do you want to?
Well, hey, Ron, let me just say that your story is not new. But what I would encourage you is to go back to VA and see if they can't help you. Why would we have to pay $150? Was that what was required?
Yeah, I think because they were going to start taking it out of my insurance. I had Medicare Part C, and it was going to, and the insurance company, and this was it was incredible. I went from getting treatments to not getting treatments. I had to wait like 30 or 40 days. And then it was going to cost, my insurance company approved it for a certain period of time, but it was going to cost me $50 per treatment. And I was getting 2 to 3 treatments a week.
Ah, okay. Did you go back to?
Yes, actually, the good news is I did go back, and the VA was able to address that, and I'm back in the VA system. But I just did want to mention that because that system is so bureaucratic and it's so knotted up, and you get put on hold for incredible amounts of time. And it does have to be retweaked, that's for sure.
Well, again, thank you, and I'm glad you went back. And all I can say is stay tuned to everybody because I've used VA for my health care since I was injured in an aircraft accident many years ago. I had no insurance, and I was in pretty much the same place you are. The issues now are that VA is like in a renaissance, and there's a great awakening. Yesterday, I was at a conference where it was brought up, and I agree with this, that we have to do something to de-bureaucraticize this so that the veterans get the respect and that they deserve, not have to jump through hoops. And I think that's probably one of the more driving forces in my service at VA. So I'm glad you went back. I would just say to everybody, stay tuned, because there are a lot of changes that are going to be happening. And it's all centered, for the very first time you're hearing, our focus is veteran focus and doing away with the red tape and sometimes the indignities of having your care stopped and then told you had to change to your provider. So as you probably know, I am a nurse, and I think that part of my fabric has been a very important thing in being a voice for the veterans in the highest echelons of the VA.
I wanted to ask you, you said you're a nurse. You understand the medical profession and healthcare. Also, you're a female veteran. You mentioned the VA is under a renaissance. How has the VA changed how they respond to women veterans? We know there are more now than ever before.
Yes, there are. And that has always been one of my focuses. I can say this. When I talk about people waking up, we had a meeting once where somebody said, why did we build all these hospitals with no single rooms for women? And the answer is, well, you weren't thinking about them now, but there's no way you can do anything that you can't be thinking of women veterans. I am concerned personally with the number of women veterans, the suicide rate of women veterans. I am personally, the number of women veterans who are homeless. And I know that the Secretary and the Congress share our concerns. So reaching out, and part of what we're trying to accomplish with the Center for Women Veterans and working with the Department of Defense, as people are leaving the military, we see that we have to be moving upstream. We can't wait till they make that big jump from being in the military to coming to VA. We have to start there. But a lot of different changes have occurred, especially increases in looking at some of the specialized care needs of women veterans.
You know, I don't know if the statistic is wrong or if I'm getting it wrong, but I think I'd seen at one point that of all the veterans in this country, about 40% are actually enrolled in the VA healthcare system. Is that correct?
Well, let me just be honest. We know that, I'll tell you that 31% of America's veterans, only 31% of them actually use VA healthcare exclusively. Okay. The number of people who are enrolled in VA healthcare are about 9 million, but they don't come there for all their care. So, for example, some may come because of the way in which Congress has made the law. If you are, let's just talk about Ron. He said he was 40%. He would have, they'll take care of what is his service-connected disability, but nothing else. That's a very different way in which our parents, the World War II and Korean veterans, were treated. It's not total care. If he wanted total care, he'd have to pay for it.
We were just talking about women veterans. How many of them access VA? You said that now there's an approach and a strategy to try to reach out to them, but how many women veterans are enrolled in the VA for getting their health care?
I can't really tell you that exact number, but I can tell you this. Because I also sit on the Advisory Committee on Women Veterans, and at one time, many moons ago, I was the chairman of this group. So for a while, it was just, I want to say, actually, people did not keep up with the needs, the emerging needs of our lady vets. today's lady vets are in harm's way, and they are not necessarily your World War II, even Vietnam. They are high performance, and they deserve and need a change in the way in which we approach their care. So for some of them, and I will say this, that military sexual trauma is a factor in many lives of our lady vets, because people do not realize that we know that about 25% of the women in the military are survivors. I like that term, survivor, of military sexual trauma. And so therefore, that really does make their whole way of accessing care and finding help difficult.
And we're going to hear more about the initiatives under the federal VA to not only serve women veterans, but all veterans. After this break, I'm here with Dr. Linda Schwartz. She's the VA's Assistant Secretary for Policy and Planning. We'll be back in just a few minutes. If you're on hold to ask a question, we ask that you keep holding. We'll be right back. But first, if you appreciate Where We Live on WMPR, here are my colleagues to remind you to call in with your pledge of support. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchel. Coming up Monday, it's been 100 years since the Easter Uprising in Dublin that eventually led to Irish independence and civil war. On the next Where We Live, we learn about a performance by the New Haven Gaelic Players that portrays the events of the uprising, and then we'll hear about that moment in history and what it means for Connecticut's Irish community. That's on Monday. Today, we're talking about the federal VA with Dr. Linda Schwartz. She's the VA's Assistant Secretary for Policy and Planning at the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. She's a former Veterans Commissioner for the state of Connecticut. Do you have a question about how the VA has served you or your family member? You can join the conversation, 860-275-7266. I want to take a quick call. Rachel's been holding from East Naugatuck. Rachel, you're on the show.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Yep.
I am a nurse in a specialist office, and we have to provide medications, and to all of our patients except for our VA patients, we're able to electronically prescribe the medications, and it goes directly right from our computer system to the pharmacies. The VA patients, we have to give them a printed prescription. They can bring it to the pharmacy at the VA and have it filled that way. I feel like it's a disservice to them. Everyone else has it streamlined and it's efficient, but they have to yearly have to come back and get a paper prescription to bring it back to the VA. I just hope there's room for improvement for that in the plan.
Well, thank you, Rachel, for bringing that up. Dr. Schwartz.
Well, Rachel, let me just say this. It is an interesting, I myself get my medications from the VA. And what you're suggesting is that, you be able to tap into sending this to the VA. Your prescriptions for your VA patients, and that we're just not there yet. And I thank you for taking the time to help our vets to get their meds. We have been working on the pharmacy issue, but let me just give you a background. Many moons ago, well, not many moons ago, I would say 5 years ago, if you did not have a prescription signed by a VA physician, the pharmacy would not even fill it. Okay, so we had veterans standing in line to get into the VA so that they could see a doctor who could write a prescription that their doctor on the outside had prescribed so that the VA would fill it with a minimal, maybe even free, but with a minimal copay of $5. That was part of what was clogging up the issue. And then some of our veterans in Connecticut would get to be seen by a VA physician who would not agree with the medication that the private provider had ordered. And so there they had been waiting all this time to get in, and then they found out that that would not happen. So in order to make the very best that we could, and I was not there at that time. I have to say this was before I went to Washington. So I know what you're talking about. And I'll just be real honest with you, we're working right now on if a veteran from Connecticut goes to Tampa and needs goes to the VA there, that we can tap into the system so that they don't have to go see a physician in Tampa. So I'll just give you an example that we have, and this might be an option. We have health, My Healthy Vet, and on that we have secure messaging so that we can actually talk to our provider. I can talk with my provider here in West Haven, even though I'm down in Washington. I can reorder my medications on that, and they actually send them to me at my home. So that's a major step. I just want to kind of put to where we are. So first of all, we want to be able to have our own system be responsive to veterans coming from one VA to another. And then the second thing that we're looking at, and we at the VA, I talked a little bit ago about the Joint Legacy Viewer. As we branch out and go more into the private sector for the care of our veterans, I see that the Joint Legacy Viewer might be a way for you, private providers, to be able to then communicate this prescription to the VA. This is an operational thing, but we have not yet. We've looked at it. We can do it with private providers. We just haven't been able to get that far with it. But we do understand the nature of the problem you just articulated. And we want to be able to have people go to private providers, and that VA can augment what you're doing. And so I see that happening. But as right now, as I mentioned, the computer systems are not necessarily the very best.
So we've got about 10 minutes, and I want to get to some questions. We reached out to veterans before the show to because people are busy or at work, and questions that they had specifically for you as the Assistant Policy and Planning Secretary. And we've heard from a veteran, Thomas Burke.
Hi, my name is Thomas Burke. I am a former infantry Marine who served in Iraq and Afghanistan. And my question for Dr. Schwartz is, how does she think that the VA can address the spiritual wellness of the veteran, and in what ways can the VA improve resiliency in those going through mental illness?
Thank you very much, and thank you for the question, and thank you for your service. I know it was probably a very difficult time, and I myself served during the Vietnam War, so I want to be sure that you don't think it's being glib. Let me just say that the whole issue of opioids and the number of medications that have been prescribed for veterans has reached almost a crisis. And we are now looking for alternatives. One of the things that you mentioned is spirituality and also resilience. I was just at a conference yesterday where we talked about this very same thing. Because for many, faith and faith in themselves is something that needs to be nurtured. I would just like to tell you a story. I myself was in an accident where I had a traumatic brain injury many moons ago. And the doctors told me I could never go back to nursing. I could never go back to school. I should just go home and bake bread and thank my husband. Thank God I had a husband to take care of me. So I said no, actually. And I kept saying it over and over and over again. And the doctors were really wanted to give me medication so I would stop saying no. But you see, the issue is my husband's a baker, and I knew he would never eat my bread. But it was the beginning of my touching my center core. So yes. Yes, we are moving along those lines. We are looking at the alternative therapies and making them available to our veterans. On the spirituality, we have been working a lot with the chaplain corps of both the military and the VA because we see that oftentimes people don't want to talk to a mental health professional, but they seek the guidance of the clergy, and that is something that is helpful to them. So we're upping the ante on that. We're making it more part of the plan.
You mentioned the opioid crisis across this country. Veterans also as part of, you know, the population that's suffering from substance abuse. What are some of the programs that the VA has to help them, residential, inpatient? Or
yes, we actually right now, our biggest challenge is to look at the prescribing practices of VA. And to acknowledge, I mean, it was to acknowledge that, you know, we all have pain. When they say you don't want to feel any pain, well, everybody has pain in their day. And so sometimes one of the things that we do at VA is we ask every time somebody comes in, we ask them to rate their pain from 1 to 10. Well, so you're calling attention to the pain, not describing what is 1 and what is 5 and what is 10, but then that kind of does influence the way in which the provider might prescribe. Through many tragedies, actually, of the overdosing or too many medications, it has become abundantly clear that VA has to change it. And now the Congress has mandated a joint work group of DOD and VA, because in reality, we have to go upstream. We can't be waiting to see what happens as they emerge from the DOD. We have to be talking, and it's for some of them, and I was a nurse taking care of casualties during Vietnam, you were really looking for something that would really take care of the terrible pain that the battle wounds were causing. But now as we look at the life you have to live, there's more emphasis, again, on the resiliency, on alternative therapies, and on looking for the spiritual guidance.
We're short on time, Dr. Schwartz. I did want to bring up this question. We've heard from veteran advocates in the legal profession talking about the veterans who've received less than honorable or other than honorable discharges and how that really cuts them out of getting benefits. Margaret Middleton, the executive director of the Connecticut Veterans Legal Center, writing us that veterans are getting bad paper at 2 times the rate. This is Iraq and Afghanistan war veterans. Getting bad paper discharges at 2 times the rate of Vietnam-era veterans and 4 times the rate of World War II veterans. So how's the VA addressing this epidemic that she calls of bad paper discharges?
Well, a tip of the cap to Margaret for all the work that she does here, and she is a real advocate. I think several years ago when Secretary Hagel was the Secretary of Defense, he asked for a review of all of these bad paper discharges. I would say it is on the agenda. One of the things that's happening over there in DOD land is that they are taking a closer look at the people. One of the things we ask them to do is we ask, well, where are these bad paper discharges coming from? Is there anything in the unit? Is like one unit really churning out bad paper discharges? And sometimes the issue is really here in the reserve and guard units. And the other thing is, it is definitely, if anybody has a bad paper discharge and it can be associated with post-traumatic stress, you can go to our regional offices, to the benefits, make that claim, and they can then authorize the care for the post-traumatic stress as a way of documenting this service-connected disability. That is about the only hope I can give you right now, except that the pioneers across this nation, like Margaret and her group, are really knocking on the door and making DOD look at this.
We're just almost out of time. I did want to ask you, the veteran population is aging. What are some initiatives to help them in long-term care?
Well, in actuality, 45% of the veterans in America are 65 or older. And VA, for the first time, I'm proud to tell you, we developed the strategic plan in our office, so we have put long-term care and extended care because we know that veterans don't want to all go to nursing homes. There's a very exciting program up in Vermont, White River Junction. It's called Veteran Directed Care, in which the VA authorizes service-connected disabled veterans eligible for full VA support to have a stipend of about $5,000 to manage their own care at home. And that would include, we would help them plan, but that would include 24/7 skilled nursing care at home. That would be Meals on Wheels. That would be adaptive, or even having people come to transport you from one place to another. I'm very excited about this, and I'm hoping that we will be able to grow it.
Well, we're pretty much out of time, but we hope that you'll be able to come back to the show. There's so much that we still wanted to talk with you about, including the suicide epidemic, homelessness, some other initiatives to help veterans around the state and our country. But I do want to thank you, Dr. Linda Schwartz. She's the VA's Assistant Secretary for Policy and Planning. You've been doing this job for 2 years. You commute back and forth from Connecticut.
I do. I still have a husband.
Who I hear bakes great bread.
Yes.
Well, I do want to appreciate you taking the time to come into our studios and take questions from our veterans. And if you appreciate this kind of conversation here on WNPR's Where We Live, here are a couple of my colleagues to remind you to call in with your pledge of support. And thank you.